WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are a positive. I wish I had a Maryland Crab Cake tour. Yeah, I do. Here it is. I've got it. It's a lottery scratch-off. We'll have these on the 29th. We're going to be down in Glen Burnie at the Pappas. That's our next event. We're going to be in Ocean City this week. I'm going to be on the convention center floor with Senator Ben Cardin, as well as Senator Chris Van Hollen, Governor Wes Moore, lots of other dignitaries and folks that the list is too deep for me to even know because I don't know who's coming on. But I'll be at the beach. I'll be the sober one there without the suntan and the sunburn. And I'll be the one that's up late, because the Orioles are playing late all week, which gives this guy a chance to at least breathe a little bit, because he's going to be on the backfield out in Owings Mills doing double duty. They don't let me into either place, so he has to do two jobs. Luke Jones joins us now with the at some point, I'm going to get you toothpicks for the rest of the month, so you can put, like, Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble have toothpicks in your eyes, staying up late with the Padres and running around with the Ravens. But you had some fake football on Saturday. I know you're not going to make all these preseason events. I guess more than anything, the charade's now over with we're going to stick our starters in for a quarter and we're going to get 2 minutes of that or this. Now it's down to who's our backup quarterback. Can we keep them alive at this point? And around the edges of, you know, a couple guys looking okay and a couple guys not looking so good, and who's going to be the left guard. These are the esoteric questions that you pursue 7 days a week out in Owings Mills, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, and really with preseason football, and this has always been the case. I mean, even when the starters played or played sparingly, and keep in mind, other teams still play their starters. I saw Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce running around for Kansas City, albeit only for a series, but it is interesting to see the range and how teams approach this. And I think a lot of it ends up being cyclical. I think once the Ravens at some point, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be this year or even next year, at some point they'll have a down season or they'll start really slow in the regular season. And John Harbaugh or whoever's kept coaching the team at this point in time will kind of revisit it and say, well, maybe we need to play our starters a little bit in the preseason. But I think the big key in looking at preseason football is not the outcome. Who cares? They won 20-19. Great. They won their 24th straight preseason game. It's the quirkiest, weirdest streak in sports. It's fun to joke about a little bit, but it doesn't matter in the big picture. It doesn't really have any significance other than maybe they're pretty good at picking rookie free agents to play in the summer. But so many of those guys never make the roster. You're looking for individuals. You're looking for position groups. You're looking for, as you mentioned the backup quarterback situation. Left guard is very much a big question between John Simpson or the rookie Big Sala, who has played a lot with the first team over the course of the late spring and certainly the first couple weeks of training camp. But for me, I think my biggest takeaway coming out of Saturday night's game, Nestor, is my concern level for the depth or lack thereof at the cornerback position for this football team. You know, quarterback, Josh Johnson, Tyler Huntley. Huntley would be my guy. Huntley looked better. He's looked better since the start of training camp. I think the question is, do you want to carry a third quarterback? Well, there'll be time to sort that out, but that's still not that critical to the success of this football team. Lamar Jackson has to be on the field. If not, then it's kind of a moot point. I don't care who's playing it. They're not going to be good enough. But you look at cornerback depth, and Marlon Humphrey's great. He's one of the best corners in the NFL. You know, three-time Pro Bowler. There's no question.
Just ask him.
But after that, I mean, you look at the rest of this group of corners. They brought in Rock Ya-Sin, who is solid on paper. But the one thing that you could point out, and they're experiencing it right now, is he's been a guy who's had some injuries. Not necessarily like these colossal season-ending injuries, but injuries that have prevented him from playing a full 16 or 17 games. He's been out with a knee for a couple of weeks now. Now, it's not considered a long-term injury, but he's someone in a new system, trying to learn a new defense, trying to build chemistry with the rest of the secondary, and he's not out there. But you look at beyond those two, even if we're going to sign off on Ya-Sin being the starter opposite Marlon Humphrey on the outside, who's the nickel corner for this team? Who are the outside corners that are going to be quality depth for you right now? And a lot of question marks right now. I mean,
and Marcus Peters had a coming out party in his big preseason game the other day, right?
Yeah, and for me, it's not even that you had to re-sign Marcus Peters, but if you felt where he was at this point in his career, knowing what kind of personality he is on top of that, if you felt that, okay, that's probably not the best fit to bring him back, That's fine. I'll accept that. But you better make sure you're covered there because we know, we've seen it firsthand here for years now. There are few ways, other than your quarterback going down or other than your offensive line being a disaster, other than those two factors, I'm not sure there's something that can sink a contender's hopes of making a deep run faster than not having enough depth at cornerback. And you get a couple injuries there, and before you know it, it's bombs away. They're throwing the ball over your head, much like Miami did in week two last year. So I don't know. And I was talking to a couple other members of the beat, others who've covered the Ravens as long as I have. I'm not so sure that I've been as concerned about their cornerback depth, where they stand at that position at this point in the season. Not talking in December if they've had a ton of injuries like they did 2 years ago, but at this stage, talking in mid-August, I'm not sure I've been this concerned about them at cornerback since the days of them trying to talk themselves into Shaquie Brown and Asa Jackson being their number three and number four corner being enough. And that's 9 years ago at this point. So
You did a lot of bitching, dude. Anybody wants to go to the Luke
I'm just
Jones catalog of complaint department for Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta in the secondary? You were that guy for years, right?
I mean it, and it's not even that it was multiple years of that, but it was just I just have concerns about where they stand at that position. And look, in fairness, I want to point this out because I want to be objective here. This isn't just bash Eric DaCosta. They do have a different defense now. What they do with Mike McDonald, they play more zone. They do play off more than they did with Wink Martindale, where their corners were press coverage on an island, playing man-to-man all the time and blitzing and all those things. So, do they need the same quality at the cornerback position as they maybe did, having both Humphrey and Marcus Peters at a Pro Bowl level? Probably not. So,
Well, when they made the
I don't
investment in
think that.
Roquan and they moved this defense to a Harbaugh defense and not a Wink, a more conservative defense, I would say. I mean, that they also balance that out and say, well, we're going to spend money in different places. We're going to have different and also draft picks. I mean, to your point, I mean, the secondary was a little bit of a mess because they missed on guys when they missed on the kid from Florida State and and Elam and those guys. They missed on all those guys in the secondary. Feels like Kyle Hamilton's not a miss, right? I mean, it
No.
feels like they spent a lot of money last year on safeties as well, so they feel more multiple on the backside. But I thought they loved Marcus Peters. This is part of me not having a press credential for the last year and a half. Last I checked, they loved him. Maybe he fell out of favor with Harbaugh for you to say, not me, but like to me, it didn't feel like it was about money in the end for him because I thought they loved him and he was a dog. I mean, JT the Brick called me from Vegas and said, what are we getting? And I'm like, oh, last I checked, he's kind of on the edge the way you would want a cornerback to be, but he guys rallied around him. They'll miss that spirit in the same way they probably miss Calais Campbell out there. Being a big boy,
Yeah,
right? Roquan Smith try is being that guy, right?
I think Marcus Peters, and again, I don't want to belabor the point too much because it's not even so much that I was anti letting him go. It's just, have you done enough to replace what Marcus Peters meant to you a year or two ago or 3 years ago? And that's where I have more of my concern. Look, he's a passionate guy. That you don't need to be around the team to see that, and we've seen that firsthand, even on the sideline, where he's got a fuse, he's got a temper to him, and he's very
Dude, I
passionate, and
was
he
10 feet
cares.
away in LA on the field that night when the
Right.
Ravens kicked their ass and he went after Jalen Ramsey and I was 10
Sure.
feet away and it was a street fight. And he
So.
had been a Raven 5 minutes at that point.
Right. So the point is, when you have a guy that plays at a Pro Bowl or an all-pro level who has that, you're okay with that, right? You tolerate even the times where he goes over the line, you tolerate that. I think what had happened was play on the field, and let's face it, he's 30. He was coming off of an ACL.
They
Will
saw
he
this
be
with Jimmy
better this
Smith.
year
It's
than he
not going to
was
get
last?
better, right? It's going to get worse, right?
And I just think when you start talking about a player whose skills are diminishing some, and look, maybe he'll bounce back a little bit from where to be better than he was last year, but is he going to be the guy he was in 2019? Probably not. So that's where you get into anytime you talk about a player who has a loud and at times difficult personality. And look, to Marcus Peters' credit, we're not talking about off-field issues here. We're not talking about that, but just the kind of guy that can be a very big presence in your locker room, and that can be good, and sometimes it's not so good. If the skills diminish to a point where what's happening on the field maybe isn't matching up with some of what you're dealing with in the locker room at times. And again, I don't want to say it was a 100% malcontent either, but that's when you start to get into, is this the best fit anymore in their opinions? And they felt not. And let's be fair. It's not as though Marcus Peters had teams beating down his door in mid-March when he became a free agent. So he didn't sign until the summertime. So for me, it's
Well,
not even
this
about
was
that, but it's
also
have you
a
done.
safe landing spot for him. He was a malcontent
Sure.
everywhere he played. I mean, he got here and he got hugged here, and that's a tribute to Harbaugh being able to,
Of course.
resuscitate guys and make them a player and get them on the program, so to speak, and let them be them. But that's what's made this place popular for players, right?
It has, and it's why that narrative that's existed for a decade now about how Harbaugh, post Super Bowl 47, he's brought in all these choir boys and they don't have loud personalities. It's nonsense. It's people who have an agenda. It's frankly, it's just people who don't like John Harbaugh. And look, John Harbaugh's got his imperfections. There's no question about that. And he's got to wear the fact that they have two playoff wins since Super Bowl 47 as much as anyone. But I don't think it's because, oh, they haven't brought in, Steve Smith was an alpha male. Marcus Peters an alpha male. They've had some other guys who are absolutely
Earl
some loud
Thomas?
personalities. Earl Thomas, now, I don't know if I'd call him an alpha male. I think Earl Thomas was just not at all. They didn't do their homework on Earl Thomas. It's that simple. There were some red flags there that I think they were desperate to make a splash that offseason, and they
Well,
made a move
and
and it didn't
again,
work.
that's where this Odell Beckham Jr. thing, they're all loving him up. He's got purple hair,
We'll
he's
see.
petting kids, like all of that. He comes in from the outside as someone the owner had to sit and talk to now. Steve's now talking to more people he controls over at
Yeah.
SiriusXM about do we want him? Is he humble? And I'm thinking, humble? Has he met Marlon Humphrey? Has he met the kicker? I mean, like that's just such a bourgeois thing for Bisciotti to say about humility. It's can you play? And I guess with Odell Beckham, my sniffer's up for that, right? For like him at that price in that room with this quarterback? Okay, maybe this is Terrell Owens and they go to the Super Bowl. Maybe it's combustible because Lord knows he was a combustible personality in New York and in Cleveland and other places where, he wants the ball and they better be throwing the ball. I mean, that's the one thing I kept thinking the other night watching. The trash that was out there running around. Is this guy setting the edge? These simple questions we're making about defense and how the other team was playing it. But I didn't see any element of the offense for me. Like, I don't know what they're going to be. None of us are going to know. You see the backfield,
Yeah.
but they have to go out against Houston. I don't know, 3.5, 4 weeks from now is the first time we're going to see the car out on the road. And I am still dying to see, even against a bad team, and they should beat Houston 34-14. I'll tell you right now, that's my pick.
There you go.
But how the offense matriculates the ball down the field, how they throw the ball, the balance they have, and what they're trying to do offensively, because it's all, fireworks and roses right now with Todd Monken.
Sure.
Oh, Lamar, I love my coordinator. I mean, and it sounds to me, and you talk about propaganda, Sandusky, Woodson, and Evan the other night, and what they have to do for Michelle Andres and selling tickets and Ravens Productions, not really dissimilar to Kevin Brown, really, when I sit and watch it and what they're trying to get across. But here's the narrative. If Kevin Byrne were here, he'd wink at me and say, "You're on to us," because they're so cunning out there. It feels to me like Lamar had a real issue with Roman. And it feels to me like all these months later now, the big talking point that John wants to get across in the press conferences, because his players all watch the press conferences, of course, that Lamar is heard by the coordinator. And the coordinator's telling the world, "I listen to him now." And Lamar's like, "He's listening to me now." And That is a big part of the narrative. Now, whether that equates to better football, more passing, more running, less run, I have no idea if Lamar's the offensive coordinator, what this would look like and what Lamar would really want to do, especially now that Lamar's been paid and he's not making business decisions anymore, allegedly. But his specialness is in him running the ball. And I don't know that they have any specialness in their running attack yet. And they're doing things different. I mean, the way the offensive linemen are setting up is completely different, right? Like, this is all different. And then Lamar's going to lose the wristband and have a whole new language in 3.5 weeks. And they're going to go out there and execute this with mercenaries like OBJ and Batemans, who are forgotten men, and Aguilar, who's trying to come back, and Zay Flowers, who is the joystick now. And where's Mark Andrews in getting the ball in all of this? I'm getting that's heavy. You and I haven't talked football in a while, but I sat here and watched this for 3 hours the other night. I'm like, we're just going to BS for the next 3 weeks because we're not going to see the offense for a month.
I mean, go look at the list of players who didn't play on
Yeah,
Saturday night. So, and even if they did, it would be very vanilla. And that's the way it always is. I mean, that's not a Todd Monken thing. That's teams. You know, that they did that with Greg Roman. They did that with Cam Cameron. They did that with Gary Kubiak. I mean, go back, and that's just how it works this time of year. But going back to what you mentioned about Lamar talking about the coordinator, first of all, I'll say this. My early impressions of Todd Monken, and that's from me listening to him during press conferences and talking to other people around the team, he's no nonsense. I mean, as far as any propaganda, there's none of that coming from him. Now, what you said as far as what Lamar had to say about Todd Monken, and I don't think it was difficult to connect the dots when you considered where wide receivers were with Greg Roman. But wide receivers also said how much they love Lamar. Well, if the wide receivers weren't happy with Greg Roman, but they love Lamar Jackson, it stands to, it's not a great leap to think that Lamar Jackson wasn't crazy about Greg Roman either then, because we know Lamar likes to throw the football. I mean, it's not to say that he's going to throw it 50 times a game, but he is very confident in his ability to throw the football, and he should be, because he is a better thrower than a lot of people do want to give him credit for. It doesn't mean he's the best in the NFL,
all that
but
being said, he
he
hasn't
didn't.
had great targets either. So let's at
And that's
least,
right.
yeah.
And that's part of it. That's part of it.
And that's
So,
probably one of the reasons Greg Roman wasn't throwing the ball around.
well, or the and or if you talk to other people in the organization, there was a thought of, why would we bring in these great wide receivers and expensive wide receivers if Greg Roman's just going to have Lamar, and Lamar wants to throw to the tight ends anyway? There's such a chicken or the egg kind of
Well, that's what makes
back
this
and forth
interesting
here.
this year, is to
Yeah.
see how this does, as you say, play out,
No
right?
doubt. No doubt. I mean, I think what's been interesting, because there's been a lot of talk. And look, I mean, you mentioned the wristband. By the way, wristbands came back on this week at practice. That doesn't mean that they're going to come off. I don't really care. I think that's such a weird narrative to fixate on. Tom Brady wore a wristband his whole career. I mean, he famously wrote on his wristband when he played the Ravens back in the day, "Find number 20 on every play," right? Remember that? I mean, that's how it works. So that part of it doesn't bother me or faze me or anything like that. But when you look at this offense, they are going to be different. They want to play with a quicker tempo. We're going to see a lot more 11 personnel, three wide receiver sets. I think that's what's been fascinating with the early indications of Patrick Ricard at least doing some work with the offensive line, that he might become, kind of a hybrid fullback slash backup lineman on game day for you, almost coming full circle, because he started on the defensive line. So now he's coming full circle, only flipping sides. But there is a lot of curiosity, and I think there's been a lot of talk about how they've performed so far this summer. I've said it a lot. It's been a work in progress. There's good, and then there's other times where you say, oh, this isn't so good just yet. And by the way, that's okay. But one thing I'll caution everyone, and this goes back to what you were saying in terms of this time of year, and it's not just the Ravens. The 31 other teams are selling the same stuff to their fan bases right now. Same optimism, same thoughts of, hey, someone's got to win the Super Bowl, why can't we do it? But it does come down to, with this offense, with this passing game, with this change in philosophy that isn't going run heavy to pass heavy, but certainly more run centric to a much more balanced approach as far as what they want to do, that when you're aiming for that upside and having a higher ceiling, there is the chance for a little bit of, a little more variance, a little more of a lower floor at times. If you're putting the ball in the air more, any quarterback, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes or whoever you want to throw out there, you throw the ball more inherently, you're increasing the probability that you're going to throw some interceptions. You know, that's math, right? So there is some curiosity about that. And there is some uncertainty as far as how it plays out. But the good news is they have a lot of talented football players and they have four of their five returning offensive linemen. You know, as long as they figure out left guard that it's not this major liability, you know, whether it's Simpson or Big Sala playing there, you do have Ronnie Stanley to that player's left and you have Linderbaum to their right. I think they'll be okay there as long as they get someone who can be decent, solid there. I think that's, if you do that, you have the makings of a really good, you know, to excellent offensive line. So you have that. You have one of the two or three best tight ends in football. J.K. Dobbins, assuming when he gets back on the field, because again, he has no other recourse but to play. You know, him sitting out the season, what's that going to do? Maybe it keeps him healthier, but he's not getting a big contract that he wants by not playing. He needs to play because he's got to go and do something over a full season, which, you know, he hasn't played a full season in 3 years. So, you know, they have
plenty of talent. I find his antsiness to be just unacceptable as a fan, as a media member, as a coach, as a leader. Fine. If you don't want to practice because you don't want to rip your knee up, just say that. It's fine. It's good.
Right.
You know, that, you know, like that's – that's cool. I mean, we all understand that. But the angst about not getting paid, dude, I mean, stop.
I mean, look, he's been really good in his career when he's been on the field. I mean, go look at his career yards per carry. It's excellent. He was excellent for them down the stretch last year, even without Lamar Jackson being on the field. So that's a credit to him. However, he still has to do that for a full season. You know, we've seen running backs look great for five or six games in a row. You know, we've seen those stretches. He's got to do it for a full season. If he's not on the field sometime in the next week, I think that narrative really starts to shift in terms of Harbaugh and the rest of the team being patient with this situation, because now you're getting into that territory. Is he going to be ready for the start of the regular season to be his best player, which is what the Ravens want? And it's sure as heck what J.K. Dobbins needs for him to get paid by someone, whether it's the Ravens or one of the 31 other teams. So he's got to get out there. And I would think if he's not out there very, very soon, I think you're going to see a very pronounced shift in the tone that the team has taken, which for the most part publicly has been patient and tolerating this approach that he's decided to take.
Luke Jones will be like David Byrne and the Talking Heads. He'll be staying up late watching Oriole baseball all week. I will be at the beach on Thursday and Friday at Mako, chatting with Senators Ben Cardin, as well as Chris Van Hollen, Governor Wes Moore, and lots of other folks. So you'll hear all about it. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're taking it down to the beach with the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation. We're back at Pappas on the 29th. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. I got to get over to El Guapo, get down to that basement and that barcade that they have in the basement there in Catonsville. Hopefully Dan Snyder will be in prison by the time the Ravens get together with the Commanders on Monday night. That's just hoping. I mean, that's not probably a real reality at this point. But what is reality, Luke, is that this John Harbaugh incredible preseason run could somehow be crashed down upon by the other team here in the great free state of Maryland. We'll find out more about that. Luke's up all week. You can find him at Baltimore Luke. He'll be in Owings Mills on the backfields all week long because they don't let me go. And then next week, the Orioles come home, and we'll have to figure all that out as the Ravens play two games next week, two meaningless games that you won't want to watch on Monday and Saturday, but just put it in your calendar anyway. It's great to have meaningful baseball right now. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.